Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, The Bounty Hunter Wars, Volume 3, Hard Merchandise, by K.W. Jeter. Now, during the events of Star Wars, Return of the Jedi. She had just about decided to kill them both. Neela looked at the back of Boba's helmet as he sat at the cockpit controls of the Hound's Tooth. There was no indication that he was aware of her standing in the hatchway behind him, but knowing Fett, with his constant preternatural awareness, she felt sure that nothing was getting by him. "He can hear the blood rushing in my veins," thought Neela. "He knows." The other bounty hunter, the one named Dengar, was still asleep in the ship's cargo area. Neela had left him there, worn out from relating Boba Fett's grim history to her. A blaster pistol dangled from her hand as she watched Fett adjusting the ship's navigational controls. Originally, it had been one of Boba Fett's weapons. She had managed to slip it away from him here in the cockpit before he had been able to stop her. That had earned Neela a grudging congratulations from him. Very few creatures had ever managed a stunt like that. "Maybe I should have killed him then," Neela thought, and her finger tightened upon the weapon's trigger. "Don't delude yourself," Boba Fett's voice snapped her out of the murderous reverie into which she had fallen. "I'm aware of your presence."
"I'll be more careful next time," said Neela.
With Boba Fett facing her, she had no more of a clue than before as to the secrets held within his skull. The dark T-shaped visor of his helmet, that battered and discolored but still awesomely functional relic of the ancient Mandalorian warriors, concealed anything that might have told her what he thought and knew. The entire answer about who she was and how she had come to the remote, friendless sectors of the galaxy in which she had found herself might be locked up inside Boba Fett, like a key hidden in the very strong box it was meant to unlock. The helmet and its dark, shielded gaze didn't matter. Not really. She was one of the few creatures in the galaxy who had ever seen Boba Fett without his helmet, for all the good it had done her. Back on the planet Tatooine, in the harsh glare of the twin suns above the dune sea, Neela had found him close to death, vomited out onto the hot sands by the Sarlacc beast whose death throes he had engineered from inside its gut. The Sarlacc's gastric secretions, like a corrosive acid capable of etching unalloyed durasteel, had stripped Boba Fett of his armor, right down to and including a good deal of his skin. She had saved his life then, hiding him with the help of Dengar and keeping him safe long enough to let his wounds heal. Wounds that would have killed a creature of lesser will. "Save the guys," thought Neela bitterly.
"And what do you get?"
Not much. And definitely not answers to questions. Anything she knew of her past was limited to the few scraps that had survived that mystery-producing memory wipe, and the infuriatingly little bits and pieces that she had picked up while serving as a dancing girl back in Jabba the Hutt's palace, and then here, aboard the stolen ship Houndstooth. So far, she had gotten nothing from Dengar. The history he had been relating to her of the infighting and skullduggery that had finally broken up the old bounty hunter's guild hadn't revealed anything of her past. And what it had told her about Boba Fett's past, she had already pretty well figured out, that he was nobody to get involved with, even on a partnership basis. For him to have hauled Neela onto first his own ship, Slave One, when they had all been under siege by a couple of well-armed lowlifes out of Mos Eisley, then onto this ship he had taken from the reptilian bounty hunter known as Bosk, didn't indicate any gratefulness on Boba Fett's part, any recognition of the fact that he wouldn't even be alive now if it hadn't been for her.
"He's got some use for me."
Neela had figured that out a while back. If she wasn't exactly hard merchandise, the bounty hunter term for their captives to be traded in for the nice fat rewards that had been placed on their heads, she was, nevertheless, part of one of Fett's mercenary schemes. Boba Fett's cold, emotionless words broke into her thoughts. A smart creature doesn't make it a habit to come up behind me without warning. Just stay out of the way while I go about my business. Neela felt a hot spark of anger igniting in her.
And what business is that?
You'll find out soon enough when we reach our destination. Even as small a piece of information as that had proved impossible for her to pry out of Boba Fett. He hadn't seen fit to divulge it to Dengar, either, even though the two bounty hunters were supposed to be partners. Instead, Fett had been cagey and silent as to the course he had plotted for the Houndstooth since they had taken over the ship.
So, we should go along with your plan, said Neela, whatever it is, without claiming.
Fett pointed to the blaster pistol tucked in her belt. Without thinking, you could get a jump on me. It's not going to happen.
Sure about that?
Neela's hand strayed to the butt of the blaster pistol at her side. But then, you'll never know, said Fett. That's still the price.
She lowered the blaster. You win, she said.
Of course.
No more emotion sounded in Boba Fett's voice now than before.
Neela regarded the blaster pistol in her hand for a moment, then brought her gaze around again to Boba Fett.
You'll have to forgive me for being a little concerned about this mysterious destination of ours. But you were the one who told me about all the big events shaping up out there.
She managed a thin smile, one hand pointed toward the viewport.
About the Imperial forces gathering someplace named Endor.
Even the name of the moon seemed fraught with dire portent.
You said it might be a decisive battle, maybe the one that ends the Rebel Alliance.
She shook her head.
I came close enough to that struggle between the Empire and the Rebels back on Tatooine.
Bit by bit, Neela had pieced out the significance of Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia Organa having been on that remote backwater world. She had seen them both in Jabba's palace, along with their companion, Han Solo, first frozen in a block of carbonite, then released and brought to life again. They had been responsible for the death of Jabba, she knew, which she also figured had been a stroke of good luck for herself. She might owe them and all the rest of the rebels her survival, but that wasn't enough to get involved with any of them again.
I don't want to get near them, Neela said decisively. They've got their war, I've got mine.
Don't worry, Boba Fett said. That's something we've got in common. Rebellions are for fools. I deal with the universe as it is. So we're not going anywhere near Endor.
He slowly shook his head.
Let them battle it out.
Fett swiveled the pilot's chair back toward the cockpit controls.
Now, leave me. I have other things to take care of.
Ella realized she had nothing more to say. He had won again, before she'd even had a chance to make a move.
She turned away, stepping through the hatch and then starting down the ladder to the ship's cargo hold. Dengar smiled when he saw Neela coming down the ladder.
You didn't have any luck with him either.
The resulting scowl on the female's face amused him.
What do you know about it?
Come on!
From where he sat against one of the hold's bulkheads, Dengar pointed to the open panel and the same calm lines that Neela had previously tapped into.
More than one can play that kind of game. I heard everything you and Boba Fett said up there.
Good for you,
Neela said sourly. She sat down with her back against the opposite bulkhead.
Congratulations.
Now you know as much as I do.
Which isn't much. Actually, I do know a little more than you.
Great.
The scowl deepened on Neela's face.
You mean this story you've been telling me? This history of how Boba Fett broke up the old Bounty Hunters Guild and everything that happened after that?
Precisely, said Dengar. You've already learned a lot from me, more than you're probably willing to admit. You've got a lot better notion now of how Boba Fett operates and how far you can trust him than you did when we left Tatooine.
For all the good it's done me.
Neela crossed her arms across her breast.
You might as well have stayed quiet.
So,
still smiling, Dengar raised an eyebrow.
You don't want to hear the end of it, then?
That's right.
Neela closed her eyes and tilted her head back.
So don't bother me with it.
The mood lasted all of 5 minutes. Then one of her eyes opened, then both. She glared at Dengar.
All right. So finish it already.
Fine, said Dengar. Whatever you want.
Then, just after the events of Star Wars, A New Hope.
Where's Boba Fett?
That was the most important question. And Prince Shizor, the head of the Black Sun criminal organization, expected an answer from his underlings, and soon. Under the present circumstances, he didn't feel like taking the time to kill a few of them just to motivate a quicker response time.
We're tracking him, Your Lordship.
The comm specialist aboard the Vendetta bowed his head with a sufficient measure of grinning obsequiousness to avoid Shizor's wrath.
His ship should be arriving in this sector of real space momentarily.
It had already been verified that Boba Fett had left the dull, virtually anonymous mining planet on which the former Imperial Stormtrooper Tehin Vasant had taken refuge, a refuge that had proven ineffective when Fett and his temporary partner Bossk had tracked Vasant down for the bounty that Emperor Palpatine had placed on his head. Vasant was now Boba Fett's hard merchandise. The bounty for the traitorous stormtrooper was due to Fett as soon as delivery was made to the arachnoid arranger and go-between known as Kuda Mubat. Turning his gaze to one side of the viewport, Shizor could see the unlovely, fibrous mass of Kuda Mubat's web floating in otherwise empty space. The web had been woven over a period of unknown decades, perhaps centuries, from the Assembler's own extrudations. To enter the web, Shizor had done it many times, was to step inside Kuda Mubat's brain, both metaphorically and literally. The thinner, barely glistening fibers were spun-out extensions of Kuda Mubat's own cerebro-neural tissue. Tethered to the strands and scuttling among them were the numerous sub-nodes that the Assembler had created, little replicas and variations of itself that took care of appointed duties ranging simple to complex. They were all linked to, and under the control of, their master and parent.
Oh, so Kuda Mubat thinks, Prince Shizor reminded himself.
The very last time he had been inside the Assembler's web, just before coming back here aboard the Vendetta, Shizor had had a most interesting and potentially profitable conversation. Not with Kuda Mubat itself, but with one of the Assembler's creations, the accountant subnode called Balance Sheet. It had shown Shizor that it had managed to detach itself from the web's linked and intertwining neurofibers without Kuda Mubat's being aware of what had happened. The crafty subnode had made it clear that it no longer cared to remain a mere appendage of its creator parent. These ambitions would make it possible for Shizor to remove Kuda Mubat, while still retaining all the valuable go-between services that the Assembler performed for Black Sun.
Get rid of the old one and put a new one in its place.
The notion had a definite appeal to Prince Shizor. And by the time that Balance Sheet, as inheritor of all its creator's position and power, would get just as meddlesome as Kuda Mubat had become, perhaps a new generation of crafty arachnoid would be ready for patricidal rebellion. Or even more pleasing to contemplate, Shizor's ambitions for Black Sun would have reached such a zenith of power, outstripping even that of Emperor Palpatine, that there would be no need for such a scuttling, secretive little creature.
Soon enough,
Shizor promised himself. Neither Emperor Palpatine nor his dark henchman Lord Vader had any comprehension of Black Sun's reach. For all of Palpatine's vaunted claims of knowledge of the Force and its dark side, he was still blind to the machinations and maneuverings taking place virtually under his nose.
That was due, Shizor figured, to the old fool's own greed and ambition,
and to his perpetual undervaluing of any other creature's intelligence. The Imperial Court of Palpatine on the distant world of Coruscant was stuffed with flunkies and witless servants Their master had made the mistake of assuming that everyone else was either adult like that or a mysticism-addled thug like Vader. The Feline Prince's hatred for the Dark Lord had been born in the deaths of Shizor's family members, deaths for which he held Vader personally responsible. Behind all his other ambitions, the goals of conquest and domination toward which he'd mercilessly driven Black Sun, there lay a more personal one. To make sure that Lord Vader paid the ultimate price for his deeds against the blood of a Feline Prince. That vengeance could not come soon enough to satisfy Prince Shizor. And a small piece of the machinery that would bring that vengeance about was on its way here. Or it should be, if he had correctly gauged his understanding of the bounty hunter Boba Fett. Shizor had baited the trap with enough credits to ensure Boba Fett's keen interest. First to bring about the destruction of the old bounty hunter's guild, and now to bring the renegade Imperial Stormtrooper Tahin Versant back to Kudah Mobat's web, where the price that had been put on Versant's head was supposedly waiting. The fool, thought Shizor contemptuously. Boba Fett had no idea of how he had been manipulated, a mere pawn in Shizor's gambit. The first indication that Slave One had come under attack was the sudden burst of light that flared across the cockpit viewport, as though the ship had struck the heart of some hidden sun. Boba Fett would have been permanently blind if the optical filters in his helmet's visor hadn't flashed opaque, protecting his eyes. The sound of a laser cannon bolt and its concussive hammer blow against the ship faded enough that the wails and shrieks of the ship's alarm systems became audible to Boba Fett. He may have escaped death for the moment, but Slave One had been mortally wounded. The ear-shredding electronic screech was its death cry. Field alarms. Fett spoke the command into the microphone of his helmet. Switch to optical status report. As the high-pitched notes fell to ominous silence, a row of minuscule lights appeared at the limit of Boba Fett's peripheral vision. He knew what each glowing dot meant, which of the ship's systems was represented by vertical rank order, and what conditions were indicated by the light's colors. Right now, they were all red. That wasn't good. The only thing worse would have been if one or more had gone to black, the indicator of a complete systemic failure. Boba Fett scanned the forward viewport for any sign of the enemy that had opened fire on him. Slave One had a deep arsenal of long-range weaponry. If Boba Fett could get a fix on the other ship, he would be able to bring his own laserkins to bear on the target. The next laser bolt scored a direct hit upon the curved center of the hull. The impact sent Fett flying backwards, landing sprawled on his back halfway through the cockpit's open hatchway. A torrent of sparks hashed against his chest and helmet visor as the control panel circuits overloaded and shorted out. The acrid smell of burning hardwire insulation and frying silicon permeated the ship. As the cockpit filled with smoke, Boba Fett grabbed the side of the hatchway and pulled himself upright. This, in his ears, was the sound of oxygen venting from the ship's hull. The last laser cannon bolt had done even more damage than the first that had hit Slave One. His helmet comlink had gone dead, as well as the red warning lights arrayed at the side of the visor. Fett pushed past the toppled pilot's chair, its pedestanchion ripped loose from the buckling floor. The panel was slick with combustion retardant foam and wet ash as he punched the computer's input microphone control. "Prepare to seal off cockpit area," he commanded. The only way to obtain a few precious minutes more of breathing time, and the chance, however slim, to survive beyond that, was to reduce the stress on Slave One's life support systems to as close to zero as possible. Letting every other section of the ship go to complete vacuum would turn the cockpit into a temporary bubble of safety.
"Atmospheric lockdown procedures concluded,"
announced the onboard computer's voice, still emotionless, though coarsened now with burring static.
"Cockpit area ready to be sealed on your order."
"Maintain status," said Fett.
There were things he had to do before the cockpit's life support systems were secure. He quickly descended the ladder leading down the main cargo hold. He still had hard merchandise aboard the ship that he intended to deliver and be paid for. The renegade stormtrooper Tahin Versant had to be alive in order for that to be accomplished. The air pressure in the cargo hold had dropped to a dizzying, heart-accelerating level. As stepped from the last tread of the ladder, Boba Fett could see a swimming cluster of black dots form in his vision, a telltale sign of oxygen starvation. The spots quickly vanished as his battle armor's reserve oxygen supply kicked in. As useful as those reserves were in emergencies such as this, they were still limited. Fett knew that he would have to accomplish his mission here fast.
I was wondering when you'd show up.
Gasping for breath, Turin Versant held himself upright with both fists tightly clenched upon the holding cage's bars. Boba Fett could feel the renegade stormtrooper's hard gaze bearing down on him like two laser trackers as he stepped close and reached for the cage's door. Let's get going. Fett had already calculated that he didn't have time to render Versant unconscious, or the strength, given the depleted level of oxygen in the cargo hold, to drag the stormtrooper's limp body up the ladder to the cockpit. It would be better just to get him up there with whatever degree of threats or personal violence was necessary, then knock him out so he wouldn't interfere with the rest of the operation. Fire and a blinding glare erupted through Slave One's cargo hold. Boba Fett felt himself being thrown backward as the hold's grated flooring ripped into pieces from the explosion that pushed apart the ship's bulkheads as though they were mere fluttering sheets of metallic cloth. Boba Fett spotted the renegade stormtrooper behind a wall of flame and black coiling smoke. Stunned by the impact of the laser cannon bolt and the catastrophic systems failure it had triggered, Versant had fallen to his knees, his head lowered as though to preserve the last flickerings of consciousness inside his oxygen-starved brain. At the same time, the ship's alarm systems overrode the muting command that Boba Fett had given them.
Let's go!
Boba Fett reached down through a wash of smoke and grabbed Versant underneath one arm. Versant's head lolled back, as though the bones had been surgically extracted from his neck. There was barely enough breath left in his lungs for his voice to be emitted as a dry, forceless whisper.
Go ahead. Finish me off.
You're too valuable to let die.
Boba Fett took one hand away from where he had clutched the torn front of the stormtrooper's jacket and prodded his gloved fingertips up under the edge of his armor's helmet. He took one last lung-filling inhalation from the helmet's air supply, then thrust the end of the tube into Versant's mouth. The minute flow of oxygen from the helmet's air supply triggered an automatic response in Versant. His back arched as his lungs filled reflexively, drawing deep from what little remained in the tiny canister inside the helmet. Fett saw that the stormtrooper still had enough of his wits about him to clamp his mouth shut and hold in the life-restoring breath he had been given. Bearing Versant up, with one arm wrapped around him, Boba Fett dragged the unresisting figure toward the ladder leading up to the cockpit area. The ladder still stood upright, though Fett could see that one of the upper attachment points had been ripped loose. A screech of tormented metal sounded as Boba Fett mounted the ladder and began the laborious process of carrying the barely conscious stormtrooper toward the cockpit. Each higher tread he stepped upon threatened to break the single remaining weld with the bulkhead above. The weld point broke just as Boba Fett reached for the top rung. For a split second, the ladder swayed clear of the bulkhead, overbalanced by the combined weight of Fett and his hard chest. With Besant's chest pressed against one shoulder, Boba Fett bent his knees into a tense crouch. Lungs burning, fingers straining claw-like, he pushed his legs straight, leaping for the metal ridge above him. His fingertips caught hold of the hatchway's curved lower rim, the stormtrooper's feet slipping in the grasp of his other arm. The only device that Boba Fett had left that would be of any use was the wrist-mounted arrow dart coiled along his forearm. Besant's weight slid lower against him as Fett brought his arm vertical and fired the arrow dart toward the cockpit. Boba felt the trailing line of the dart grow taut, indicating that the barbed metal had snagged onto some anchoring point inside the cockpit. Using the control studs at the base of his battle armor's glove, Boba Fett hit the arrow dart's retract function. The miniaturized traction engine embedded in the sleeve of armor had been designed only to handle one humanoid-sized burden, not two. He could sense a warning glow of heat against the flesh of his forearm as the dart's trailing line reeled back, drawing him and Besant slowly up toward the open hatchway. Fett waited until the line had dragged him high enough to throw one elbow across the rim of the hatchway, then levered himself into position for pushing Besant up onto the floor of the cockpit area.
Rassant came too.
At least enough to realize what Boba Fett was trying to accomplish. The stormtrooper's fingertips reached out and scrabbled a hold onto the cockpit flooring. With a kicking thrust, he managed to drag himself up and out of Fett's supporting grasp. With both arms free now, Boba Fett threw his other elbow across the hatchway's lower rim and tensed to pull himself the rest of the way up.
Hey, thanks.
Fett heard the grating, smoke-harshened voice and looked up into Vasant's grinning face. The stormtrooper had rolled over and gotten himself into a sitting position.
I appreciate it. Now you can go die.
One boot shot out, his sole catching Boba Fett directly in the visor of his helmet. The kick had enough force to knock him back from where he had clambered onto the lower rim of the hatchway. Only the line tethered from his wrist into the cockpit behind Vasant kept Fett from falling back down toward cargo hold. Boba Fett managed to grab the rim of the hatchway with one hand. He looked up and saw that Vasant had gotten to his feet and now stood gazing down at him. In one hand, Vasant held a sharp fragment of metal, part of the debris that the laser cannon bolts had scattered through the cargo hold. His ugly smile growing wider, Vasant held the edge of the shard against the line running past him from Fett's wrist to its anchor inside the cockpit.
This time, said Vasant, sneering, it's really goodbye. For you, at least.
As he pressed the cutting edge of the metal fragment harder against the line, he raised one booted foot and prepared to smash it down upon Boba Fett's hand. Before the boot came down, Vasant was thrown off balance by the tethered line going suddenly slack. Pressing the miniature control studs at the base of his wrist, Boba Fett let the arrow dart line reel up until it had lengthened by several meters. That was enough for him to cock his free arm back and snap it forward again. The tethered line looped lasso-like and snagged around Vasant's neck. Fett hit the wrist-mounted control studs again, retracting the line into a choking garrote around the other man's throat. Vasant staggered backward, fingertips clawing at the line, digging into his throat. The pull from the taut line enabled Boba Fett to climb up into the hatchway. With his eyes squeezed shut in pain, Vasant didn't see the blow from Boba Fett's gloved fist. It sent the stormtroop sprawling onto his back, head slamming against the base of the pilot's chair. Boba Fett reached over with his other hand and snapped the arrow dart line free from his own wrist, pushed the dazed Vasant over, and used the loose end of the line to bind Vasant's hands together with a hard knot. He pulled the line down to Vasant's ankles and bound them the same way. Then he picked Vasant up by the front of his jacket and threw him into the far corner of the cockpit. Seal off cockpit area, Boba Fett spoke aloud. He was already leaning over the control panel as Slave One's onboard computer executed the command. With a hiss, the hatchway door closed behind him. With a few adjustments from the still-functioning navigational rockets, Fett brought Slave One around to where he could at last see the other ship that had fired upon them. The outlines of Prince Shizor's flagship were unmistakable and intimidating. The ship was known to be one of the deadliest and most thoroughly armored in the galaxy, the equivalent of anything matching its gross tonnage in the Emperor Palpatine's war fleet. The mystery of why the Vendetta hadn't moved in for the kill was easy enough to determine. He's holding back, decided Fett, just waiting to see if there's any sign of life. The Feline Prince was known to be something of a trophy collector. It would be entirely consistent for him to want the hard physical evidence, the corpses of those he had set out to kill, rather than just blowing them into disconnected atoms drifting in space. The greater mystery was why Shizor had lain in wait and fired upon Slave One in the first place. Fett had been aware of no connection between Shizor and this high-stakes job of rounding up the renegade stormtrooper for which Palpatine had posted such an astronomical price. But there had to be some link. It was too much to believe that it was mere coincidence or just random malice on Shizor's part. The Feline Prince's mind was too coldly rational, similar to Boba Fett's own in that manner, for anything like that to be the case. Boba Fett lowered his gaze from the viewport and began punching in new commands on the control panel. With a final jab of his forefinger, he hit the button to fire up the one main engine that was still functioning. Slave One shuddered, its hull threatening to tear loose from the battered structural frame beneath as the engine's convulsive thrust blurred the stars in the viewport. Prince Shizor gestured to one of the weapons techs standing behind him. Re-access previous target and prepare to fire.
Your Excellency,
the comms specialist sounded nervous. That might not be such a good idea. Boba Fett has maneuvered his ship so that it's directly between ourselves and the web of Kudar Mubat. Any evasive maneuvers on Boba Fett's part might result in the bolts striking Kudar Mubat's web instead. The comms specialist shrugged and spread his hand palms upward. Of course, that would be up to you to decide as to whether to risk it or not, but given the ongoing business relations between Black Sun and the Assembler, Shizor irritably waved off the underling.
You don't need to remind me about all that.
Sending a few laser cannon bolts through Kudar Mubat itself, and not just the Assembler's messily conglomerated web, would not have been any cause for grief. But to do so in this way, with all the repercussions that would follow from it becoming known through the galaxy that Black Sun had a short and fatal way with those that served them, would cripple Shizor's further plans. Beyond that, the new ally that Shizor had slated to replace Kudar Mubat was also inside the Assembler's web. Shizor had no intention of losing so potentially valuable a creature as Balance Sheet, the crafty little accountant sub-node that had declared its independence from its creator.
Your Excellency, the comms specialist said, looking up at Shizor, Kudar Mubat has made direct contact with us. He wishes a word with you.
Kudar Mubat's high-pitched, nerve-grating voice came through the speaker.
My so esteemed Prince Shizor, of course, as always, boundless is my trust in your wisdom and abilities. Never would I doubt the propriety of any action that was initiated by your spotless hands.
Get on with it, growled Shizor.
Very well,
sniffed the Assembler. Shizor could imagine it on its nest in the web, folding multiple jointed limbs more tightly around its pallid, wobbling abdomen.
How is this for bluntness? You must be an idiot to have begun firing upon Boba Fett in open space. Do felines have no capacity for discretion? This entire sector is under constant observation because of the presence of my web here. Must I remind you that others are very likely watching? Some of those watchers are business associates of mine, or those with whom I might wish to do business at some time. I realize that your reputation would be enhanced by publicly eliminating the so esteemed Boba Fett, but what about my reputation? I certainly would prefer to have creatures killed than pay the money I owe them. But pray tell, who's going to do business with me if they think they're going to wind up dead?
Don't worry about it, replied Prince Shizor. You've got more pressing concerns right now. Your business associate, for whom you've expressed such concern, Boba Fett, he's headed right your way.
Well, of course he is. He's got merchandise to deliver.
I'm afraid you don't understand. Boba Fett can't bring Slave One to a halt before it crashes into your web. From our scanning of his ship, we know that all of his braking rockets are out of commission, which, of course, is something that he knows as well.
Ah!
A wordless, panicked shriek came over the unit speaker.
Ow!
The absent assembler managed to regain a measure of control, enough to sputter out a desperate question.
How much time do I have?
I'd say, Shizor glanced over at the tracking monitor and the rapidly flickering numbers on the readouts below it. You better brace yourself. Before any more annoyingly high-pitched sounds could come over the speaker, Shizor reached over and broke the communic connection between the Vendetta and Kudar Mubat's web.
Your Excellency, the comms specialist spoke up, do you have orders for the crew?
Track and pursuit. There's going to be some pieces to pick up. Interesting pieces.
Boba Fett emerged from Slave One and stepped into absolute screeching chaos. He'd expected as much. This result had been part of his plan the moment he'd conceived the notion of plowing his ship into Kudar Mubat's space-drifting web. Kudar Mubat had designed and spun the web out of self-extruded filament, both structural and neural, so that it could incorporate bits and pieces of ships and other artifacts. The web had no other defenses. Its ability to quickly incorporate and seal itself around anything that penetrated it was the only way it could maintain a life-supporting environment inside its curved, matted, and tangled fibrous walls. More than the web structure had been hurt in the ship's impact, the web, a living thing itself, reacted to the trauma in its own pain-filled way. The din of shrieking that sounded in Boba Fett's ears came from sub-nodes that had been torn loose from the neural fiber strands that had tethered them to their controlling Kudar Mubat. The matted floor was thick with the scuttling forms, writhing in spasms of pain or scrabbling in tight little circles, their limited onboard cerebral functions completely overloaded by the sudden disconnection from the assembler on his nest in another part of the web. Spiry, crab-like subnodes, trailing their snapped connectors behind them, clambered over Boba Fett's boots as he stepped down from Slave One's hatchway. He kicked a few aside as though they were chitin-shelled rats. A few of the smaller ones were unavoidably crushed beneath his boot soles, their husks crackling like thin eggshells. Boba Fett reached back inside Slave One's hatchway and grabbed the front of Perrin Versant's jacket, now hardly more than rags held together by its blood-tarnished metal fastenings. With a sharp pull, he got the former stormtrooper to his feet. Another tug brought the other stumbling out of the ship. Let's go. Time to get paid.
Ah, my inevitable associate, the distinct Boba Fett.
A halting voice, squeaking like rusted metal, greeted them as they emerged from the web's central tunnel.
How charmed I am to see you once more.
Standing in the center of the web's main chamber, with the stormtrooper tethered a few steps behind him, Boba Fett gazed upon the arachnoid assembler, or upon the crippled shell of what Kudar Mubat had been. Slave One's crashing into the web had obviously had an effect for the worse upon its master as well.
You're not looking too good, Kudar Mubat.
It was a statement of plain fact. Boba Fett felt no great sympathy for the assembler.
I'd better get my credits, thought Fett, before it dies.
How kind of you to show such concern.
The pneumatic subnode that had formed Kudar Mubat's cushioned throne was apparently dead, its deflated and flaccid membrane extending around the assembler like a gray waxen puddle. Kudar Mubat itself was hunched down in the thicket of its spidery black legs, the inverted triangular face lowered and tilted to one side. Most of the compound eyes studying its visage appeared lifeless. Only the two largest eyes at the front seemed able to focus upon the web's untimely visitors.
To be honest with you, there have been times I've felt better.
Face it, Boba Fett said bluntly. You're dying.
Oh, no. Not at all.
The triangular head raised itself a bit, displaying a shakily lopsided imitation of a humanoid smile.
I'll survive this, as I've survived other things.
A twig-like forelimb lifted, its front claw twitching and pointing to Kudar Mubat's head.
This is no more than the result of a neurofeedback surge from the crash. That's all. But you shall see, all things can be mended.
Perhaps they can, Boba Fett shrugged. It doesn't matter to me, though.
And what precisely does matter to you?
Getting paid.
Ah.
The assembler's head twisted a bit as though trying to force its visitor into focus.
But I am not the one who is paying for this merchandise.
You're supposed to be holding the credits.
And so I am. But there's another involved, and he decides when you get paid.
Kuda Mobat's smile turned even uglier.
And if you do.
Those words were not to Boba Fett's liking. His preference was always for straightforward business deals, delivery of merchandise followed by prompt payment of the bounty. This deal had become far more intricate than that, though he already had a notion about who was behind these complications. That's why Prince Shizor showed up, decided Boba Fett. Somehow it must have been the Feline's credits rather than Emperor Palpatine's that got put up for the return of Trin Vasant. And Shizor would rather kill me than pay me.
It looks like you're starting to figure out a few things.
The halting words were tinged with Kudar Mubat's sly laughter.
You've been part of Shizor's schemes, and mine, for a long time now. Our little scheme, yours and mine, to break up the old bounty hunter's guild.
Kudar Mubat shook its narrow head.
That was Prince Shizor's idea. I only went along with it because he made it worth my while. But he's the one who wanted to break up the guild. And you did that for him.
Then you lied to me. Boba Fett's voice was as emotionless as always, but inside himself there was a spark of anger.
Mere matter of business, my dear Boba Fett.
What else did you lie to me about?
You'll find out soon enough.
Kudar Mubat's smile didn't diminish as it turned toward one of the fibrous corridors that branched off the web's central space. One of the assembler's subnodes scuttled out of the corridor and onto the tip of its past feebly extended forelimb.
Tell me, my dear little Balanchine, has our other guest arrived?
Boba Fett recognized the subnode creature as the one that had always taken care of the financial details from Kudar Mubat's business dealings. The sharp intelligence that had always been discernible in the subnode was completely undiminished, as though it had been unaffected by the neural overload resulting from the crash of Slave One into the web. That was a mystery, but one which Boba Fett didn't have time to wonder about now.
The Vendetta is just now docking with us.
As though to confirm Balanchine's statement, a shudder ran through the rough structure around them. Boba Fett strode over to the mouth of the corridor leading to the docking area. From its holster, he drew out his blaster pistol. Head tilted to one side, Kudar Mubat looked at him with alarm.
What are you doing?
In front of the assembler, Vasant managed to scrabble into a sitting position, also watching Boba Fett.
This is not necessary.
I'll tell you what's necessary and what's not. Carefully and slowly, Boba Fett pointed the blaster's muzzle at Kudar Mubat and Vasant in turn. If you both want to live a little longer, you'll stay quiet and not spoil this little surprise for Prince Shizor. He raised the blaster up by the side of his helmet. Footsteps were already audible. Boba Fett flattened himself against the side of the corridor's opening, blaster at the ready.
Watch out!
Boba Fett had known that Vasant would try to warn Shizor as soon as the Feline Prince appeared. A bolt from the blaster pistol, hitting Vasant in the shoulder and knocking him back against the base of Kudar Mubat's nest, served both to silence him and distract Shizor's attention. That gave Boba Fett the microsecond he needed to get an arm around Shizor's throat and put the muzzle of the blaster against his head. Shizor seemed more amused than surprised by what had happened. He spread his empty hands apart.
I intend you no harm, Fett. Quite the contrary, in fact. You are a valuable entity to me.
Difficult to believe. Boba Fett didn't lower the blaster pistol in his hand. Given that you were so recently trying to blast me into atoms with your ship's laser cannon.
A misunderstanding, said Shizor soothingly. These things sometimes happen in the course of business. Just as it sometimes happens that a person such as myself might change his mind about what needs to be done and who needs to be eliminated.
Glad to hear it, said Fett, but I don't buy it.
You have a right to be skeptical. I'm sure our mutual friend and associate here has been telling you some interesting things. Information that might not reflect too well upon me.
The Assembler said you were behind the plot to break up the old Bounty Hunters Guild. Is that true?
Does it matter?
Shizor looked at him almost pityingly.
If there was something that I wished to achieve through destroying the guild, and I'll admit there was, that doesn't negate its value for you. Let's face it, many times in its own crude, bumbling way, the Bounty Hunters Guild got in your way. Now the guild is no more, and you face any other bounty hunter as an individual without anyone to back him up. Thus, your work is made that much easier and more profitable.
Shizor's cruelly smiling gaze seemed to penetrate the visor of Boba Fett's helmet.
So, what is there for you to complain of?
Being taken for a fool. That's what.